Well, hello once more. Welcome to the Tottenham Way podcast for an episode that, alas, will be rather more somber than the last couple following Tuesday's defeat at Fulham. Tuesday's inevitable defeat at Fulham. I'm Marcus Buckland. And all I can say is why, Ange? Why make the same mistakes as your predecessors? Why make 9 changes for a cup game away at a Premier League side? Why can't you respect the League Cup, especially in the absence of any European football? And why didn't somebody from within the club warn him that this would be a hammer blow for the fans and a serious miscalculation after such a bright start to the season? Dan Kilpatrick of the Evening Standard is with me today, and I don't mean to direct my anger at you, Dan, but please tell me why such an experienced, canny manager can get it so wrong, having done everything so right for the first couple of months of his reign.
Hi, Marcus. Yeah, I was really surprised at Postecoglou last night, I've got to say. I think miscalculation is the right word. I was very surprised at the team naming 9 changes from the Man United and Bournemouth game. You know, after all, this is a season without European football. This is a season when the domestic cups felt so important. The only real chance, let's be honest, of winning a trophy. And I think last season, for me, felt like a tipping point where the domestic cups were concerned. I think with the Forest defeat and the Sheffield United defeat, fans were so frustrated, particularly by the latter. It felt like a real moment where a majority of the fan base had kind of decided that actually for them, the cups were more important than the top four. And that's what they wanted the club to go for going forward. And it feels to me like Postecoglou has been so in tune with the fans from the off. You know, he's just said the right thing at every occasion, you know, particularly after the sale of Kane. He's got it right. He's really dragged fans with him. He's bringing them along on this journey. And then he goes and plays that team that just felt like a throwback. It felt like so many kind of cup lineups and then subsequently cup performances we've seen over the last few years. And the end result, as you said, was the same and kind of inevitable. I am sort of wary of working backwards from the result. You know, I didn't hammer the lineup when I saw it. I know other people on social media did. But nonetheless, I think when you make that many changes, expecting a really coherent and kind of fluid performance is always a stretch, especially against a side like Fulham, who, as you said, are a canny opposition, well-organised. Perhaps they went a bit stronger than Postecoglou was expecting, albeit they did make 6 changes from the draw at Arsenal. But you're just never going to get a kind of fluid, top-notch display. I think everyone would have understood kind of 4, 5 or 6 changes, but 9, and particularly with some of the players who were involved, I think that the result was kind of wholly unsurprising in the end.
Yeah, and Dan, it seems to me that there's a lack of joint up thinking, if that's the right expression I'm trying to come up with. I mean, the bottom line is, I mean, has Daniel Levy not had a chat with Postecoglou at the start of the season? Have some of the experienced backroom guys, the likes of Ryan Mason, some of the players said, look, silverware is the priority here. When we get to these domestic cups, as much as you want to try out some of the other squad members, you can't afford to experiment to any great degree. I just find it mind-numbing that he can do that. And I'm sorry to be so negative, but I was one of those when I saw that lineup, 9 changes, a probable alteration in the formation as well. I immediately thought, oh no, here we go again.
As tempting as it is for some fans, I don't think we can pin this one on Levy. I mean, I would be really alarmed if the chairman was kind of telling the manager what kind of teams to play. But I get your point about...
No, but not that, Dan. But just listen, please prioritise the domestic cups.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think that is kind of... Levy wouldn't consider that his remit, but I totally get your point. Again, I just think Postecoglou misread the room. I mean, I feel that fans were desperate for a cup run. They wanted that excitement. I think a lot of people accept that Spurs are an outside bet for the top four, even considering the good start they made this season, and that the Cups were a real chance for, you know, an exciting campaign, obviously a bit of silverware at the end of it, and just to kind of journey, not to mention all the practical elements that go with being in the Cup, like extra games to, you know, try things out and obviously, ironically, play your fringe players. So yeah, I just think he misread the room, Postecoglou. I'm not really sure why. You know, obviously, he would contend that, you know, these players are all part of the squad. They're all in his plans. They need minutes. He needs to see them. He said afterwards he's still in the discovery phase of the squad. But again, I mean, the thing that kind of frustrates me, and I'm sure frustrates fans, is, you know, what did we really learn from last night that we didn't know already? I mean, the only thing I think I really took away from that is that Postecoglou's way of playing is going to be very, very difficult without Vicario, Romero and Bissouma, and probably Maddison as well, because you can't beat the press. You can't play through the lines without technically gifted, adventurous passers like those guys. I don't think we learned anything new about Davinson Sanchez. We know he's been short of form and confidence for a long time. I don't blame him for the penalty, really. I mean, anyone could have missed, but he had a really rocky game before that and was at fault for the goal, the own goal, after being turned inside out by Kearney. We didn't learn anything new about Højbjerg. We know he doesn't really like being heavily pressed. I think he's a very useful player coming on late in games, as he's done in the last two. He's useful surrounded by more technical players, but you put him in there with Skip and Lo Celso, and I don't think the end result was that surprising. Spurs couldn't get through and bypass Fulham's press. And we didn't learn anything new about Davis and Emerson. You know, we know that when they're playing in tandem together, you are not going to get a lot of thrust and attacking dynamism from fullback. You're just not. Mm. You know, they're the kind of defensive two. Porro and Udogie are obviously the sort of attacking two that he's been playing. But, you know, could you not have played, you know, one of the first team guys, played Bissouma maybe? What I remember from the Barcelona game on the eve of the season was that Spurs played a fringe squad but dominated. But tellingly, they had Bissouma and Vicario in that team. And that makes all the difference. You know, you had a player at the back who can play out, and you had a player in the middle who can withstand pressure, play forward, and again, beat the press. And there was just none of those elements last night. So yeah, I think really, really frustrating. It was a tough draw, clearly. All respect to Fulham. I thought they played really well. They were organised. They were impressive. They're physical. They've got threats. They're technical. But that game was made a lot tougher by the team Spurs put out. And that is very, very frustrating for fans. And it feels like a kind of early setback for the Postecoglou project that was quite avoidable.
Well, certainly was avoidable. I mean, you know, if he made four or five changes, I think we'd have all said, yeah, fair enough. Of course, you've got to have a look at a few players before the transfer window closes. You either give them an opportunity to cement their place in the squad, or you put them in the shop window and maybe get a few extra million for them in the transfer market. But I don't think it's fair on those players to bring nine in and expect them to gel straight away to a Premier League team on a bit of a high themselves after getting a very useful point at Arsenal at the weekend. So we go out of the League Cup at the earliest stage, I think, since 2005. I read your article, which reminded me of that. I mean, it's not even the end of bloody August, and we've got one cup competition left. If we lose in the third round of the FA Cup, we're going to play 40 games this season. We don't need to be resting players. We actually don't need that strong a squad if that's going to be the case. It'll be a maximum one of 45 if we actually win the FA Cup. But in terms of who did play last night and some of the other fringe players, what do you think is going to happen? First of all, to Lo Celso, who started but was then taken off at half-time. Does that mean the end for him, or do you think he's going to hang around?
I think Lo Celso will hang around. I don't know whether it was just tactical or if he had a knock last night. Obviously, Dane Scarlett came on, which was another really surprising element of the game, I've got to say. I mean, I expected there could be a change or two at half-time, but I thought it would be Maddison or Bissouma or perhaps Romero, not Dane Scarlett. I think he did okay. He didn't really look like a goal threat, but he stretched Fulham a bit. But as for Lo Celso, I can't see him going. I think he's a sellable asset, Lo Celso, let's be honest. I mean, he's an Argentina international who's kind of highly regarded in his country, would probably have been a World Cup winner had he been fit. But I think it would take a big offer for Spurs to sell now, and they're only they would only have been likely to get kind of loan offers or relatively small bids, I think. So I think he stays as Maddison's backup. I actually think he was fine last night. He scampered around a bit. He looked for the ball. Again, he wasn't surrounded by particularly technical players in Højbjerg, Skip, Davis and Emerson, which made his job harder, I think, as the kind of lock picker. So I think Lo Celso stays. I think if Maddison gets injured, which obviously he was for a period of last season, then I think Lo Celso, as it stands, at least until Bentancur is fit and up to speed, is the one who would probably come in as the more creative backup midfielder.
Yeah. What about Davinson Sanchez? I mean, I feel a little bit sorry for him, but he had a poor game. As you said, he was at fault for the goal. Brave enough to take a penalty, but again, I go back to the management. I don't know who said they would and who said they wouldn't, but I was very surprised when Sanchez went up to take a penalty as early as he did. Is that going to be his last kick in a Spurs shirt?
Possibly, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think with Sanchez, he has clearly somewhat played his way back into contention. He came on at Brentford, did fairly well. Did pretty well in that Barcelona game I mentioned earlier, made a lot of last-ditch tackles there, and I think he impressed Postecoglou. But last night, he was poor. I mean, there was a moment early on where he gave the ball away to Anthony Robinson, then got skinned round the outside by Robinson, who is very quick, and it created a big chance for, I think, Muniz for Fulham. And he looked jittery with and without the ball. He was at fault for the Fulham goal. Kearney turned him inside out and then crossed, and obviously it was a Van de Ven own goal. So it was no real surprise to me that he didn't look full of confidence when he went to take the penalty. Fair play to him for stepping up. But yeah, I would question why he was taking the third spot kick when Maddison was still to come. Højbjerg, he may have been fifth, we don't know, but he didn't take one. Scarlett didn't take one. Ben Davis, he's a very, very experienced player, didn't take one. Sanchez probably stays unless there's a very attractive offer. I think Wren have had a bid rejected for him.
Oh, no. No, go on. Wren, you can... I have respect for Davinson, but you can just tell when it's not going to work for a player. I think it's in his interest and the club's interest for him to have a fresh start. I really do.
I agree with you. I just think he's clearly the third-choice centre-back at the moment. So Spurs don't have a huge incentive to sell him on the cheap. If they can shift him, Tanganga and Eric Dier before the deadline of bringing a centre-back, I think Postecoglou will be pleased. I think that's what, in an ideal world, would happen. But I just wonder whether Sanchez being above Tanganga and Dier at the moment is the kind of likeliest to stay.
Okay. Obviously, we expect Hugo Lloris to go before the end of the week. Reguilón being linked with Manchester United, amongst others. Now, do you expect him definitely to go?
Well, I expect Spurs to try and find a taker for him. I think United have moved on to Cucurella at Chelsea. Looks like that deal's probably going to happen. So they're not going to go for Reguilón. I imagine Spurs will find a loan for him in Spain before the deadline, possibly Italy. There seems to be a lot of interest in sending players to Italy. Tanganga being another, Ndombele being one. They're in talks with Genoa, whether he wants to go to Genoa, who have just been newly promoted to the Serie A.
I don't care if he wants to go to Genoa. He's going to Genoa. I'll pay for his flight.
All this stuff is kind of ongoing at the moment. I'm wary this pod could be dated pretty soon because there's a lot of frantic activity, I think, at Spurs today to start really shifting the unwanted players. I think getting the Fulham game kind of out the way when, you know, obviously Sanchez and Højbjerg is another one who could go, played, was important, and now that's done. It's and now Spurs are out as well, and it's I think something like 17 weeks to Christmas with 15 games, so really no need to have these players hanging around at all, frankly. And before January, Spurs could get away with a squad of, you know, 15 or 16 players because they've just got so few games.
The only plus, and let's doff our caps to Richarlison, who finally scored. Now, is that going to open the floodgates? I mean, he does work hard, doesn't he? But we all said at the weekend, even if he scores one, I don't think many of us think he's going to go on a really purple patch, a huge run of form a la Harry Kane. But were you encouraged by what you saw from him last night?
I think you've got to be encouraged by the goal. I think it always makes a difference for a striker who's short of confidence and struggling and is letting frustration get the better of them, which obviously he was. So, yeah, I mean, Ange was interesting afterwards saying that actually he thought it was his poorest performance of the season despite the goal, and his all-round game wasn't quite as good. Perhaps that's unsurprising given he was in a weaker team. But you have to think that that's potentially a chance to kickstart his season and even his Spurs career. You know, goals are what strikers live for. Richarlison's no different. It was exactly the kind of goal Spurs want from him, you know, a good cross to the back post, and he just came alive in the box. And I think that's where he can thrive. You know, if he's got two wingers who want to get to the byline or come inside and put in dangerous balls into good areas for him, that's when he can be really useful. You know, he's not going to be Harry Kane and, you know, dropping into the number 10 position and dictating the play, but Spurs don't really need that anymore. They've got Maddison and Bissouma for that. And what they need is someone who's going to be alive in the box and be a threat and occupy defenders and press them. And I do think Richarlison can do those things. And I think a goal will hopefully give him the confidence, keep him in the team. And hopefully we kind of see him kick on at Burnley at the weekend.
But is that, Dan, then going to cool interest in a possible extra striker? I mean, Johnson's being linked. We know all about Orban. And certainly I made it clear at the weekend, I don't care even if Richarlison has scored a hat-trick last night. And I know we haven't got so many games now because we've gone out of the League Cup, but I still feel we desperately need an alternative up front. Is that going to happen this week?
I think it probably will. I mean, I think a lot depends on outgoings. Postecoglou's been very, very clear that Spurs can't keep adding players to the squad without offloading the unwanted ones. It does sound like things are picking up on the sales side. I think Spurs will bid for Brennan Johnson, and I think Forrest will probably sell. I think for all the bullish noises they're making, need to sell, and 40 to 50 million would be too good for them to turn down in their position for a homegrown player. It would be really important for FFP. I think they're straying a bit close to the line on that one. I think that could well be a deal Spurs do. I think it kind of makes sense in that he could play centre forward like Son, but he's also an option for the wide area, so it just strengthens across the board, gives Postecoglou the chance to rotate Richarlison with Son or Johnson, but doesn't tread on the toes too much of Scarlett, who he obviously rates very highly and looks like he could be, you know, a genuine part of the first team squad this season. And of course, Valise, who's just come in and is going to take 6 months or so to get up to speed, but is clearly a player Spurs think is quite promising. So, yeah, I can see the value of signing Johnson. It would feel a bit strange, I guess, if like half the Harry Kane money goes on him. But that is the going rate for young homegrown players at the moment. You know, I've lost track completely of how much everyone's worth. And seemingly 40 to 50 million is what you've got to pay.
Well, as you say, this could easily date very quickly. There are going to be lots of comings and, hopefully comings, certainly some goings over the course of the next few days. Just a final thought, because you were obviously there and you spoke to Postecoglou last night. What was his manner like in defeat? Could you sense that he was bristling when he was asked a few questions about his squad selection? Did you gauge a little more about the man in whom we are now pinning all our hopes?
Yeah, good question. I would say he was defiant. He certainly defended his team selection and said, you know, how am I supposed to find out about my players if I don't play them in this kind of game? You know, he very much viewed it as they're part of the squad. You know, they're Spurs players, they're here, even if some of them won't be long term. And, you know, I've got to use them. So he kind of came out swinging, but he was clearly disappointed and clearly frustrated with the result. His manner tends to be fairly consistent, I would say. He's slightly kind of low-key in his demeanour. He always says the right thing, I've found, and he's kind of quietly authoritative and charismatic, but his manner doesn't tend to change too much, and it was similar again last night. But you know, certainly he was keen to kind of defend the team and kind of get behind his players. It was put to him that, you know, he might have learned which players he couldn't rely on last night, and he kind of pushed back on that and said that was too harsh a way of putting it, for example. Yeah, I mean, for me, I do just wonder, you know, if he's a success at Spurs, which we all hope he is, and you know, he's there for 3-4 years, I think that could be a game that you kind of look back on a few years down the line, you look at the lineup and think, oh, wow, you know, I've completely forgotten that Sanchez played under Postecoglou, or I've completely forgotten that Højbjerg played under Postecoglou. I do think that team you know, in time will come to feel very, very dated, which I think overall is a positive thing, because it speaks to the fact that, you know, some of those players just don't have a long-term future and don't look good fits for his system. But then it also makes it, you know, even more frustrating that, you know, that was the lineup he went with, and that was kind of how Spurs squandered the chance to, you know, win the most winnable competition of the season.
Well, Dan, do us all a favour ahead of the Burnley game when you speak to him. Can you get him to write down and sign some sort of affidavit, a promise that when we get to the third round of the FA Cup and we're drawn away to Rotherham, whoever it is, can he promise us he will play his strongest team? And I don't care if he still wants to check on a few fringe players. He could, as I said on Twitter, and a few people criticised me, I said, listen, in the league, you sort of can get second chances. I remember when we finished in the top four, you know, we lost successive home games to Southampton and Wolves. We still made the top four. You can bounce back from league defeats. You can't bounce back from a cup exit. So please get him to sign some sort of form before the Burnley game, promising this will never happen again. Can you do that?
I would try my best, Marcus. Yeah, my mission at the moment is to get him to sing Big Ange Postecoglou. Have you heard Robbie sing it?
Yes, yeah, brilliant.
Out of my head, I've got to say. Singing it all weekend under my breath.
So yeah, I stopped singing it last night, though, I have to say.
You were understandable. Yeah, yeah. I was back on it first thing this morning. So I'll try and get him to sign the affidavit and sing Robbie, and it'll all be quickly forgotten.
All right, well, listen, Dan, thank you very much. It was hugely disappointing, but we've got to deal with these things. We've become accustomed to dealing with these things. We'll watch with interest and see who goes, who might come, and we'll be back. We'll see exactly what happens. If there are some major stories, perhaps we'll reconvene before the Burnley game. If not, there'll be a reaction to that one as well. The two Toms are lurking with intent. But thanks to Dan Kilpatrick, I'm Marcus Buckland, and I'll still say it with as much gusto as I can. Come on, you Spurs!